Hello, good afternoon. Is this Mr.
Chris Cashin?
Chris, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
No way. Is it true? Now the question also is, can the radio listeners hear you? How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, thank you. And you?
Doing pretty good. Hey, we were just hoping that you might be able to give us a little bit of an update as to what's happening on the ground there. How are you able to grow anything in desert conditions?
Well, irrigation is definitely necessary if you're going to be planting little seedlings in April. And we haven't had any rain, so it's pretty dry right now. We are scrambling to get some lettuce and broccoli in the ground today and expecting some rain tonight, which is always welcome. Some free irrigation. And, yeah, it's been, you know, kind of a get the irrigation system out early type of year. We pumped water last week, and actually, you know, to be quite honest, it's been kind of enjoyable because we haven't had to worry about working around the moisture in the wet fields, the places that we can't get into when it's raining. So the positive side of being dry in the spring is you get a lot of field work done, a lot of plants in the ground, and then when it doesn't rain, when it's supposed to, you have to start having irrigation plans in the background.
Nice. So that's pretty handy for you, Chris, that in this way that you have this a good irrigation system on your farm, huh?
Yeah, we actually we are really lucky. We have an underground pipe that we installed several years ago, and Matt Herman and myself put in 4-inch pipe underground. Every spring, we thank God that we put that in the ground, and make, you know, we just have about 3,000-4,000 feet of pipe underground. So, as you can imagine, having to lay out pipe and install a hose system above ground every spring would get old.
It gets so old, right?
Very quickly.
Yeah.
Moving pipe is something that any vegetable grower will tell you is not really the best job or the most fun job to do.
Well, I got to, you know what, I got to apologize, Chris. I should back up for a second and actually introduce you. Chris Cashin, farmer and grower over at Miller's Crossing here in Claverack, New York, Columbia County, mostly doing vegetables, I believe it is, a very vibrant CSA. You're at the farmer's markets. Do you have animals still? Are you still doing some animal husbandry as well, Chris?
Yes, that's actually why I was late to call you. Is that
what were you doing?
I was feeding the cows. They came home and they wanted to be fed.
So you've been working till the cows come home?
Yeah, literally. They came home and I fed them, and now I have to go to Little League baseball practice.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you coaching or just watching?
Coaching.
Oh, awesome.
And watching.
Yeah,
hopefully.
No. Yeah. You can't watch. You gotta play.
Yeah.
That's the way to go. So we're totally not completely labor free, but that pipe is all laid out in the ground already, and so we kind of have to do that spring, check over, make sure everything made it through the winter without cracking, and make sure you drained all your pump housings and your motors, and your pipe is, you know, got squirrels living in it and chipmunks. And we did all that last week in anticipation of this dry weather, because it, you know, didn't look like it was going to rain, and it certainly paid off being ready, because, you know, we had quite a bit of plants in the ground, and it was like, you know, 80-something degrees and planting on black plastic, and felt like middle of the summer.
Yeah.
And let me just quickly ask you a non-technical question. Farming can be a group effort, and in your case, it's actually a family effort. I'm wondering how your wife, Katie, who farms with you, and your wonderful parents, Jim and Meg, are doing.
They're all doing well. They're my folks are without hot water as we speak. We're trying to figure out why their boiler's not working, but otherwise.
But they're doing well. They're doing great. They just can't take a shower.
Exactly. They're going up the road for a shower. They're doing well, and Katie's very busy. We're homeschooling our kids, and she's doing that. She's also doing a lot of horse and pony stuff and helping out getting the greenhouse stuff in line and picking out neat varieties and, you know, doing things that she enjoys doing on the farm.
So you're saying that the kids are able to learn things from a farm?
Well, you know, it's funny. The business and the house, you know, there's a line there that we always try to keep just because the farm can become quite consuming, you know, and there's a point in the day when the kids are kind of sick of hearing about the farm and they want to talk about more important things like, you know, music and baseball and things like that. So they do help, and they're very aware and conscious just because they've been around it their whole life. But we haven't pressed them into full-time service yet. My oldest is 13, so we're kind of going slow and easy with that and trying to keep them optimistic and happy about the you know, about the whole farming thing in general. But as you know, farming can be intense, and we don't turn them off to it too much. So we're trying to keep it light for the kids.
Well, they're learning how to take care of animals. You said you still have the horses, you said?
Yeah. So we have chickens and horses and ponies and the cows and lots of dogs and cats. But, they actually are more involved than kind of almost than we notice, just because it's just a part of life, everyday chores. And got to feed them in the morning, feed them at night, check their water, put them out the pasture, ride them. So they're getting the responsibility lessons that go along with animals and pets and all that, as well as seeing where the hay comes from. You know, we make all of our own feed here on the farm. So, like I said, they're kind of absorbing their education through just being around it and growing up with it. And I think they know more about farming at their young age than I did it, you know, as a teenager. So that's nice. I mean, whether or not they end up being farmers is another story. We'll see. But in the meantime, they're certainly getting a full dose of it growing up.
Yeah, that's great, Chris. Hey, also, when you're saying what Katie does in the greenhouse, that's a lot of planting seedlings for perennials for summer sales that you do, that are all not just vegetable, but also you sell a lot of perennial flowers and annual flowers. Is that correct?
Yeah. No, actually, Hudson Farmers Market is an awesome market, and Hudson is a gardening town. There's a lot of people who have backyard gardens and, you know, patio stuff going on, and I'm always amazed at how many people who live in the, you know, within the boundaries of the city of Hudson who have big gardens, and, you know, they buy a plant from you in the spring, and then they come back, it's like reporting on their children. They tell us how their tomatoes are doing and how their pepper yield was and what size cabbage they grew, and so it's fun to kind of get to know people a little bit through their hobbies, and plants are always just feel good, you know. People come to the garden to get, you know, to get out of their house and do fun things. So it's nice to be supplying them with the things that make them happy.
So if I want to stick a bunch of pepper plants and some tomato plants in my backyard garden here in Hudson, for example, first of all, after I do my lead tests, how do I find your plants? Are you, can we come to your farm? What's the best way to actually buy startup plants, and when from you?
Yeah, well for starters, you know, obviously the Hudson Farmers Market every Saturday from 9 to 1 down at the DMV parking lot there is probably the easiest, quickest thing off the top of my head. But we also sell to area nurseries, you know, the Berry Farm in Chatham, and honestly, Hoofwalk up in Albany, and, you know, all sorts of on-site nurseries. You know, places that are selling plants to the public, so people can get our stuff through there. But we're also pretty excited to be working and preparing a farm stand at a farm in at, you know, here in Quabert. And so out on Route 217, we're going to be opening hopefully in 2 to 3 weeks to the public, you know, both plants and produce and maple syrup and beef, all the things.
Oh, that's great. I was hoping you were going to get there. That's great.
Yes.
Is that located on the old Runyon farm that you are now working?
Yes, it is. That's exactly where.
So on that big corner, as you get onto 217, heading towards Philmont from Hudson, you're pretty much right away. The first farm you come to used to have a bunch of dairy cows there. So that's now Miller's Crossing Vegetables going in those fields. What else besides vegetables are going in your fields and cover crops?
We are going to be planting day-neutral strawberries this year in kind of an effort to have those essential items that you need to have at a farm stand to make people happy, you know, sweet corn and strawberries and tomatoes and all the things that people really get excited about. And we'll get them to stop their car and pull in. We're also, like you said, doing a lot of the cover crops. We're going to, make straw and offer square bales and, all the things that we kind of have here. We're going to try to figure out a way to offer it to the public if it's appropriate, if people have an interest in it. It's one of the exciting things about having a direct market stand is you can kind of, try the different things out that you grow that maybe you enjoy, but you've never tried to bring to a market itself, have a venue to offer it to the public.
You said something about also growing your own feed, which really fascinates me. Are you doing that?
Yeah. So, it's pretty straightforward, pretty simple. We have a grass-fed herd of beef cows. So, we're not doing grain, per se, for the animals. We're doing grain for the, for the cover crops.
Gotcha.
And so, pretty much hay and pasture are the main components of our, feed for the animal system. But we're doing grains for cover crops, and we can feed our chickens oats, but we don't grow corn and we don't grow soy, things like that. So it's another way to obviously we wouldn't want to be buying hay if we had the opportunity to make it. So making the hay, and we sell a little bit of extra hay that we have. Works out pretty well.
Hey, Chris. How was the maple season for you?
It was good. Obviously, as everyone was talking about, it was a really early season. We were tapping in the end of January, which is kind of unheard of. For the last several years, it's become a little bit more typical with these wild swings of weather we've had. But ironically, 2015 was one of the coldest seasons, and a lot of the challenges that we faced last year had to do with the fact that it was so darn cold, and things were frozen, and things didn't run so late because the trees were all frozen as well. So then you fast forward to 2016, and it was like complete opposite. You know, we had one day at the beginning of March where we had sap coming out of the trees at 70 degrees, which the night before it had been 28. So we had a run, there was sap there, and it was good sap. We were making syrup out of it, but it's a pretty sugar mineral rich solution that you start cooking with. And so when it gets warm like that and it sits, you really got to be careful about things fermenting and start kind of wreaking havoc on systems that maple syrup is designed to be done in during the cool weather.
Chris, does that mean as the spring comes in and it's no longer this late winter, February, early March, which is more your time, as it becomes later into March, the trees actually producing a higher sugar and mineral content in the sap, which affects the process?
No, actually, what it really is the sap itself does change from year to year, and there's kind of a lot of conjecture as to why it changes, but really the issue is that for us this year was that you're dealing with kind of a, it's like if you leave corn, if you leave something out that needs to be refrigerated, it goes bad, whether it's milk or, juice or cider, things like that, they ferment. And we have a reverse osmosis machine, which all the sap that we collect goes through an RO machine before we boil it, and it creates a pretty concentrated sap solution, which is really high in sugar. It's a lot sweeter than the sap you taste when it comes out of the tree before we cook it. But if it's really, really warm and you've concentrated that sap into a really high sugar solution, it becomes very volatile. And therefore, you don't have a lot of time, especially if it's warm out. And
right.
We had warm sap that was coming out of the tree in a warm barn trying to cook it before it went bad. And so it would actually, we were kind of on a race, in a race against time to keep the quality high and keep it fresh. We had to throw out a few gallons here and there that we were not happy with. So it was just challenging, you know, one of those things that the year, like I said, the year prior, 2015, you know, we were trying to thaw lines in the morning and, you know, keep things from freezing up before 4 o'clock in the afternoon. This year, it was the exact opposite. We were trying to, you know, keep things cold enough so we could cook it before it started to go bad.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Hey, Chris, we don't want to take too much away from your busy, busy life as a farmer, but we really appreciate you calling in on the show here.
Yeah, well, thank you for calling, and you know, we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Some rain tonight.
Yeah, I bet you are. Hey, and it'd be great to touch base a couple more times over the year and just hear how things are going for you on the farm, Chris. And it's also really nice just to hear what you had to say about your sugaring season or the comparison of the last 2 years and just get a little bit of a view on things. I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, well, we'll touch base in a couple of weeks, maybe a month or two.
Sounds great. And my big shout out to your wife, Katie, and your siblings there on the property, and particularly your mother and father, Jim and Meg, matriarch and patriarch of the farm operation down there in Claverack and Miller's Crossing.
Great. Thanks, Karen. Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Take care,
Chris.
Now. All right. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Cashin calling in from Miller's Crossing here in Claverack. We are going to break for a song. That has been a great healthy dose of farm reporting here on the Monday afternoon show. We will be right back after this tune.